This is station PCJ of Philips Radio, broadcasting on 31 meters, our weekly Friday program, which only lasts for 60 minutes.
Estación de la Alegría, The Happy Station Show.
Hello everyone, hello everywhere. Welcome again to another edition of The Happy Station Show. I'm Keith Parent. Today's show is going to be a lot of fun, but before we get to it, I want to tell you about our website, which is www.pcjmedia.com. We have a poll running, and we will be announcing the results of the poll in next month. The question is, who is your favorite Happy Station Show host? You have five choices, the first being Edward Starts, the second, Tom Meyer, the third, Pete Myers, the fourth, Jonathan Goubert, and the fifth, yours truly. So go ahead and vote. And while you're at the website, you can check our online stream, which is being hosted by live365.com. Now, we haven't officially launched it yet. We'll be launching that very, very soon. So do check out our website for the details. Today's show is a very special one. I have a very special guest on the line. And he has been acting, well, more than 50 years, yes, and he's been in some of the most popular television series that aired in the United States and that also aired around the world in syndication. Who is my special guest? Well, let's play a little piece of music to see if you can guess who that is.
There's a magic in like bright and shiny new dimes. If we're ever puzzled by the changing time, there's a plate of homemade wishes, a on the kitchen windowsill. And 8 is enough to fill our lives with love.
Well, as you probably gathered, that was the theme song to the popular American television series 8 is Enough, which ran for 5 seasons on ABC in the United States, but it was also shown around the world and dubbed into more than 20 languages. The first time that I ever caught the series was actually in French in Montreal when it aired on Télémétropole. And just recently, on a cable channel here in Taiwan, I was amazed to find a Chinese version of it, which was very unusual. Dick Van Patten is my special guest on this edition of The Happy Station Show. We talked about many different things during our conversation, from his early days in radio, Broadway, and his first appearance on television in the 1950s on a show called I Remember Mama. So sit back and enjoy. You know, you've had such an impressive career. You've been acting. You did some radio acting. You were in a popular television series from the
1949, the first series called I Remember Mama.
How did you get the role in that anyway?
I auditioned for it, you know. I was working a lot then, and I got an audition, and I auditioned for it, and I got the part.
When you were starting off, because it's interesting because your brother and sister are also in entertainment. Your sons are also in your family is like an entertainment family. Was this something that you had wanted to do, or were your parents trying to push you into a different direction?
No, my mother was a real stage mother, and she even pushed me into acting. You know, it was all because of my mother, and then I had a good time and I enjoyed it. So I wanted my kids to do the same thing, and they did. My son Vincent was a child actor, and so was Jimmy.
When you started off and you were in radio, what were those days like for you?
I used to go up to NBC after school. Then I would sit on the third floor, and they would call me for different shows. I did almost every radio show there was, and sometimes I did two in one day. I did David Harum at 10:45 in the morning, and then in the afternoon, I did Young Widow Brown. I used to do two shows a day. It was really, I never stopped working.
That sounds incredibly hectic. It's sort of like, oh, we better get Dick now. He's in the hallway. It's time for his part.
But the big actors that always played my mother and father, Agnes Moorehead almost always played my mother, and Richard Widmark used to play my father. They were all radio actors, you know.
You know, you've like I said, you know, you've been in entertainment for so many years, and there've been so many changes that have taken place. I mean, it always was big business, but there seems to be a certain. Would you agree if I was to say there's a certain coldness that exists in the industry now that maybe didn't exist at that time?
Yeah, it used to be more like a big, happy family. And now there is, I think the competition causes the coldness. You know, everybody's in competition with each other. It's not quite the same.
Well, you know, it's funny because recently I was talking with somebody and they said, you know, back then, if a television series, say, didn't do well in the first season, they'd be like, well, let's try a different time slot and give it a go. And in many cases, it happened that these shows then became TV classics. But today, if you're not a success in the first episode, you're history. You know, what is your approach? I mean, when you are playing characters and roles, when you started off, did you have a choice in the roles, or were you saying, well, you know, I'm starting off, so I'm just going to take anything that comes along, and nowadays,
no? My mother used to say to me, don't ever turn down a job, and I never did. I took whatever they offered.
But there must
I never studied acting, but I worked with so many great directors, and I think I learned a lot from them, you know.
So you would say then the craft that you learned was from being around these amazing actors, like for example, like Agnes Moorehead, who was a phenomenal stage actress.
Well, she was really a radio actress more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then she became a movie actress.
You did the first television series, which ran for many, many years.
9 years, from 1949 to 1958. It was live every Friday night at 8 o'clock. And it was, I grew up on that show. Hmm. I really did.
What was it like working in live television?
It was very strange. I had only done radio, and all of a sudden, we did a pilot for this radio show called I Remember Mama, and they bought it, but they said, why don't we put it on new TV? It's a new thing that's coming out. So they switched it over to television. I didn't know anything about television. I didn't even think it could happen. It seemed like a miracle that it could happen. And then the show started, and it was the first TV series on the air. I mean, it was 9 years we were on.
Hmm. When doing live television, there must be a certain energy that you get from doing, especially if it's weekly, a certain adrenaline that you get from doing a performance in that kind of environment.
Yeah, it was. You used to get nervous before the show because you knew that it was live, and if you made a mistake, which happens lots of times, you know, it was embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to be a little bit nervous before the show.
Do you still get nervous today?
Not as much, no. No, not as much.
It's almost, in some ways, people would say that you're playing yourself in every character that you portray. Would you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that.
No?
On Love Boat, I played a wife beater. I beat Rue McClanahan up, and I've played villains, too. Although, I am usually cast as a nice guy, so the average nice guy. But I have played the other kind of parts, too.
Mm-hmm.
I can do them.
Do you like playing villains?
Yes. It's a little more of a stretch.
Yeah. When did things really start to gel for you? I mean, after you left that first TV series that was on for 9 years.
Yeah.
Did you then start getting regular gigs for TV shows, or was there a period in between where producers and directors, you know, kind of typecast you because you had been in a TV series for so long?
Definitely. When I Remember Mama went off the air, I went for a couple of years without getting any work because I was considered the kid on I Remember Mama, and it took me a couple of years to get rolling again. In fact, it wouldn't have happened except I got into a show on Broadway for Elaine May, and I was in it for about a year. It was called Adaptations Next. And then she said, I'm going to send the show out to Hollywood for 8 weeks, but then I want you to come back to New York and continue the New York run.
Mm-hmm.
So I came out to Hollywood, and I did the show. I got very good reviews, and then I got all kinds of offers for TV, and I never returned to New York. I sold my house back there, and I stay here. I just went from one job to another. But there was a period of about a year and a half when I couldn't get work right after I Remember Mama. But Elaine May got me rolling again.
But getting typecast is something that happens quite often. I mean, especially with a TV series that is on for such a long time. I mean, if I can think most recently, something like Frasier with Kelsey Grammer. I mean, Kelsey Grammer, even though he has done other things since Frasier, people still watch him and go, oh, that's just Frasier Crane.
Yeah, it does happen.
What would be your advice to someone who let's say, a young and upcoming actor who maybe was in a television series as a child star and wants to get out of that kind of situation? What would you just say, just give it time and maybe take a little break and try to do something that is different to get the attention again?
Well, time does help, but you still have to have a lot of luck. And I think my advice would be to keep trying. And if it's supposed to be, it will happen. That's the way but it is tough after you do a series for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to keep plugging away and just hope that time will heal it, you know? As it did in my case, I got lucky. But there is so much luck involved, I think, anyway.
When you started doing Eight Is Enough, was that also just by luck?
No, I had it. Here's what happened. I auditioned for a pilot of Love Boat, and the same year I auditioned for a pilot of Eight Is Enough. And then I got them both. I got both parts, and I did the pilots. And then only, you know, one pilot in 10 sells. They both sold. Eight Is Enough sold, and Love Boat sold. So I didn't know. I had my choice of playing the doctor on the Love Boat or playing the father on Eight Is Enough. So I didn't know what to do. So I figured, well, I took Eight Is Enough. I think it had more prestige, the part of the father,
mm-hmm.
you know, than playing the doctor on Love Boat. Well, the Love Boat ran 10 years, and we only ran 5 years. So I probably would have made more money on Love Boat.
What was it like working on Love Boat?
It was fun. It was a nice cast. Mm-hmm. I liked them all. And when I did the pilot, we went on an actual cruise for 2 weeks. We shot the whole pilot on a cruise. So it was fun, you know, to do. In fact, when I was trying to make my decision about which part to take, I was thinking, gee, I like those cruises. They're fun. But I still took Eight Is Enough.
Well,
I guess I made the right move.
Well, you could always say that, you know, that even if you didn't even, let's say, get the offer for the part for the doctor on Love Boat, you can say, well, I got a 2-week cruise out of it.
That's right.
So when you started doing Eight Is Enough, how much of the cast that was in the series was in the pilot, or was everything all sort of already settled?
We did the pilot. The boy, Grant Goody, was not in the pilot. He played the oldest son. And the boy that did it, right after he did the pilot, he got the lead in that big movie. I can't think of it now. Debbie Reynolds' daughter was in a space thing or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he dropped out of Eight Is Enough, and Grant Goody played it. But originally it was another guy who was a star for a while.
When you did the series, was the series initially a hit in the first season, or did it take some momentum to get going?
To tell you the truth, I didn't think it was going to be a big hit, because I thought it was just like Father Knows Best, you know, like that. I figured they did a lot of shows like that. So I was sort of surprised it was such a big hit. I had no idea. And then the original girl that played my wife was Diana Hyland, and she died after the fourth show. So I figured, boy, that's going to be the end of the whole show. But it wasn't. They wrote it into the script, and they had Diana Hyland die in the script, and then they got to be the new wife, Betty Buckley. So it worked out. I guess it was just supposed to be. Did you know that the original wife was Diana Hyland?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, and she was engaged to John Travolta.
Hmm.
They were going to get married, and then she died.
Hmm.
And she was a young girl. She was 38 years old.
What's amazing about the series is that, especially for the time, it was probably, and probably still is, one of the few one-hour comedy dramas that they incorporated a laugh track into.
That's right, they did. It's very subtle, but it was there.
It seems very odd now, because the DVD version that I picked up, you have the choice of either keeping the laugh track in or turning it off.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Which makes me wonder, what was the idea of putting the laugh track in, or was that just the idea, let's try something new and different?
No, I guess they just felt it would work, and they were right.
Mm-hmm.
The laugh track did work.
What was it like for the run of that show? I mean, it was on for 5 years, and it was shown all around the world. The first version that I saw of it actually was not in English; it was in French. And in French, the show is called "Huit C'est Suffit," which means basically "Eight Is Enough."
Oh, and how do you say it? Say that again.
Huit C'est Suffit.
Oh my gosh! Now, when they showed the show in Italy, it was called "Ocho la Famiglia." Ocho la Famiglia was called Eight in the Family.
Mm-hmm. And when you did that the show, and you were working with especially the younger actors, how was that? I mean, did it take time to get into a certain work pattern, or did the cast just really all gel together?
Well, let me tell you, I loved it because I was a child actor, and I grew up in a TV series, I Remember Mama. Now I was in a show called Eight Is Enough, and I was working with 8 child actors. So I felt like I had a bond with them. You know, I knew what they were going through. I went through the same thing, and I think it helped the show. You know, I loved working with kid actors because I was one myself.
You know, something that is quite amazing with not just Eight Is Enough, but other programs that you even made guest appearances in, like I Dream of Jeannie. When you watch them today, because many of these shows are still running in syndication around the world, there seems to be a certain joy and happiness amongst the cast that really comes across on screen. Something that you really don't. The feeling today is very different. The feeling today, I find, is very different.
Well, I know that we were all very happy on Eight Is Enough. We all liked each other very much. And I think that's a lot part of what made the show a hit. We really did. But I know what you mean. Some of the shows today don't have that kind of a feeling.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, but you really sense that, you know, everybody enjoyed working together. And even from the, you know, from behind the camera, the crew, you can tell by the way they've put, because it's a craft, you know, it's an art form, it's a craft, and it really comes across when watching it. But there must have been projects that you've worked on in the past where you said to yourself, "Ay, ay, ay, I can't believe I did this. I wish I could leave."
My mother always said, "Don't turn down a job." So I'm always happy to be working. I don't think I ever remember I wish I could get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
I always figured it's good to have a job, you know.
During that period when I was doing some research, I came across some TV appearances that you did in these TV shows that were quite common in the 70s and early 80s, where they would get a lot of guest stars coming together to do like circus acts or running and all kinds of sports things. What was it like doing those kind of shows? Because the one that I saw you in, you were supposed to be involved in a sprint or running around the track with some other celebrities.
That was called Battle of the Network Stars.
Yes.
At ABC, NBC, and CBS, the different actors from each one of those networks, we would have networks called Network of the Stars. And it was like a tournament. It was a contest. There was another one called the Beverly Hills Families. And my family won the whole thing. We won $100,000. But there was a lot of sports in it and running. And you're right. But they don't do those shows anymore. That's out of the question, I guess.
It boils down to probably too expensive.
They were fun, though. They were fun to do. And I was always lucky on them. I always did well.
And by the way, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to a special edition of The Happy Station with my special guest, American actor Dick Van Patten.
KDX World Round Radio presents The History of Happiness. In 1995, happiness was discontinued worldwide. Since that time, things have become more and more serious. Until one day, Keith Perrone and PCJ Media brought happiness back to the world, one short wave at a time. Listen for The Happy Station Show. The History of Happiness came to you from KDXRadio.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs, SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
You're probably wondering what's wrong with my voice today. Well, I caught another cold again, which is the reason why it sounds a little deeper now than during the interview that we recorded 2 weeks ago. Dick Van Patten has come out with a new book called 80 Is Enough, One American's Journey Through American Entertainment. It was co-written by Robert Baer and is available from Phoenix Books. My question to Dick was, why do you think people would find this book so interesting?
I think they'll get a kick out of it, especially people that remember the show. And I've had a terrific career, been very lucky. I go, you know, all those Broadway shows, 27 shows in a row I did. And I think it makes for good reading. I really do. I think it's been an interesting life.
Mm-hmm.
I thank my mother for getting me into it, because If it hadn't been for my mother, I never would have gotten into acting, I don't think.
Would that be the same for Joyce and your brother Tim?
Yes. Joyce is a wonderful actress, and Timmy's doing real well as a director. My sister just got through doing a movie up in Boston with Adam Sandler. She was working up there for 12 weeks. It's a movie that's coming out pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And Timmy's working all the time.
You know, it's amazing because some of the stories in the book have made me giggle. I mean, because you were working at a time when Hollywood was very different than it is today.
Yeah.
When you look back now, I mean, and you think about these stories that happened, do you ever say to yourself, I can't believe this all happened to me?
Well, first of all, when I meet 7-year-old children, I can't believe that I was on the stage on Broadway at that age. I can't believe I did what I did when I see 7-year-old kids. When I was 7 years old, I opened up on Broadway. I was in all those shows. I don't know. It's amazing that I did it.
You know, but you were a child actor. One of the things that I'm curious about, because we hear so many cases of child actors and actresses who were, let's say, in a hit series when they were younger, and as they got into, you know, in their maybe their late teens or early 20s, started to get into a lot of trouble. How did this not happen to you? Or because your you know, your mother, you know, said to you, right? Dick, don't do this.
The reason it didn't happen to me is I had great parents. Mm-hmm. My mother used to say, you're only as popular as the show that you're on. And you know, just treat it as a job. And they were terrific parents. So it never went to my head as a kid. I never got into trouble acting or anything. Being a child actor, I think it's the ones that got into trouble. I think their parents weren't alerting the kids to what was going to happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my mother used to say that to me all the time. It could all end tomorrow. Don't let it go to your head. You know, don't turn down any jobs. But that was all good. I think that's why I came out okay.
But when you see that happen to some child actors and actresses, I mean, even Adam Rich, who was on Eight Is Enough, has had trouble with the law. Did you ever sit down with him and say, listen, Adam, we need to have a talk?
Well, I did at times, but I'm not sure it worked. You know, he's okay now. He's clean now. But no, it didn't help. I used to sit down with him and say, you got to stop this, Adam, and get you straight. It didn't help. But now he's okay. But while the show was on, he was doing bad things, I think.
Mm-hmm. How much do you keep in touch with the cast after the series went off air?
Well, I keep in touch with them pretty much. In fact, I spoke to Adam last week, and Diane Kay I speak to all the time. And I'm the godfather of Susan Richardson's little girl. So we remain pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
I like them very much. We all like each other a lot. But I was disappointed with Adam while the show was going on, when he was getting in trouble. But I think that one of the reasons Eight Is Enough was such a hit was because of Adam Rich. He was so good on the show. He was so cute. People used to watch the show, I think, just because of Adam Rich. I really mean that. He was so good. He was very good. And he's okay now. He's fine.
Mm-hmm.
He was over here last week, and he's okay. He's doing good.
When the series ended, you did two TV special, two reunion specials. Has there been any talk, maybe in the last couple of years, of doing another reunion?
No talk at all. But there's been no talk of doing reunions, no. I think it would do well, good, though. I really do. We're all here, you know.
What do you, if somebody says to you, you know, you're going to go down in TV history, because even today, the show is still being syndicated on television in many countries on specialty networks. You must be a certain pride to think, you know, I did that series, it ended, you know, many years ago, but it's still being enjoyed today.
Well, I'm glad. I'm very glad to be a part of it. I'm very proud of it. It was a very well-written show. It really was. Bill Blinn wrote it,
mm-hmm.
and he did a good job.
Now, that, of course, was one of, The Love Boat, which was Aaron Spelling's production. What was it like working with Aaron Spelling?
Oh, he was nice. You see, before he became a producer, he was an actor. He was when he was a young guy. In fact, I auditioned for him. Not for him. He and I auditioned for the same part in 1946. I was about 17. And I think he was a little bit older. And we auditioned for the part, and I got the part. But also, Marlon Brando auditioned for it, and so did Roddy McDowell. And I got the part with Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontanne. I played their son. But Aaron Spelling auditioned for that part, too.
Hmm.
But he was always good to me. You know, I didn't do The Love Boat, but I did do one a year. It was on for 10 years, and I did a guest shot on it every year. So I did 10 of them.
Do you think that because he had worked as an actor, this also helped make the shows that he produced such a success? Because he was an actor himself, so he knew what actors were like.
Well, he was awfully good to actors. He gave them so many jobs. I think him being an actor himself, he had a lot of sympathy for actors. He always wanted to help them.
Mm-hmm.
He sure helped me. I did 10 of them.
You know, one of the memorable roles that people also remember you with is a movie that you did with Mel Brooks, Spaceballs.
Oh yes, I did a few movies with Mel.
What was that like working with Mel? I interviewed a while ago Steve Lawrence, who was in a TV show in the 50s with Edie, that Mel was one of the writers, and he said Mel was mad in some ways.
Well, he directed. I did 4 movies for Mel Brooks. I did Robin Hood, Men in Tights, the one that you just mentioned. Anyway, I did 4 movies. I can't think of them all. But he is a riot to work with as a director. He keeps you laughing on the set the whole time. He's a very funny man and very smart. He's got the most alert mind, very quick thinking. And he is so funny. You're laughing the whole time you're doing this picture. Really.
would it ever happen that in the middle of a scene, he would be off camera doing something that would crack you guys up?
I wouldn't say that so much, but during the direction, he would be telling you so many funny things. Yeah, you just kept laughing all the time. He's very smart and very funny, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he came from a poor section in Brooklyn, Williamsburg, and became a writer on the Sid Caesar show. I mean, he really made it just on his mind, boy. I have a lot of respect for him.
You know, one of your other jobs, you can say, is you were the co-founder of Natural Balance Pet Foods.
Oh, yeah, that's doing real good.
How did that come about?
Well, I'll tell you. You remember when John Davidson had a talk show?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, I was on it one day, and when they broke for lunch, I sat next to this guy that was a drummer on his show. And while we were talking, he was telling me that he rescued animals and dogs and cats. I said, oh, I do that too. And he said, well, I have a great idea for a dog food, a holistic dog food. There was nothing like that at that time. This was 1989. And so I said, gee, that's a good idea. I'm playing tennis tomorrow morning with this lady veterinarian. I'll mention it to her. So the next morning, I played tennis with this lady veterinarian. And I said, I worked with a guy yesterday, and he thinks he's making a holistic dog food. And her eyes lit up. She said, that's a wonderful idea. She said, I could make up a great formula with no byproducts, nothing like that. So we got together, and she made up the formula, and then Petco picked it up. They said they would try it out for 5 weeks. If it did well, they would keep it. And it did well. It went right through the roof. And it's doing terrific now. It's like one of the most popular animal pet foods there is.
Because at the time, you were one of the, I think, or if not even the first company to produce such type of pet food.
Absolutely the first. Mm-hmm. Yes. If you ever read the ingredients, there's no byproducts, there's no corn, no soy, none of that stuff that a lot of pet foods put in their food. We don't have any of that.
In December, I was planning in my head, you know, who I want to have on the show for this year. And, you know, the ideas can come anywhere. And I was walking, because I have three dogs myself, three very large dogs.
Oh, what kind of dogs?
I have a Labrador, Golden Retriever, and he's not small. He's 22 kilograms, and I found him when he was about 2 months in the street. He was filthy. He was
really?
Dirty. Yeah, he was filthy and dirty, and I said, well, I think I'm going to keep him.
Oh, thank God you found him.
And he's the naughtiest one of the three, but he's also the fussiest one. And I was... he won't eat anything. And I went to one of the local pet shops not far from where I live. And I was explaining to them, I said, look, the problem with him is he's very fussy. He won't eat this. He won't eat that. He eats what he likes. And they gave me some samples, some of the package samples of Natural Balance. Right. And surprisingly, to my surprise, he ate it.
Oh, good. That's great. That's funny. But anyway, it's doing very, very well. And it's, I'm very lucky. Again, I'm very lucky.
How much in the daily operation of the company are you involved, or
I was there this morning over at the factory, and I go to the factory about three times a week,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to see how everything's going and all. And it's going great. And everybody that works over there, they all like each other, and it's a big hit. another hit story.
I mean, it's so interesting because you really bring a certain joy around people. I mean, even if I watch you in something, and even talking to you now, you're a rarity, I think, in Hollywood. You don't see too many people like you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I'm married 56 years, so I guess that is rare.
56 years?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, what would your advice be to actors today in Hollywood who get, you know, I find it so amazing. You have an actor and he gets married and they get married together or whatever. And there's so much publicity around it. It's almost like a TV series in itself.
Yeah.
And then they're together for 2 years, and then the divorce and separation, there's more publicity around it. And it's like another television series.
It's so sad, yeah.
I mean, what would your advice be? I mean, what I find quite amazing now is how much, I would say, pressure actors in Hollywood are under these days, because they're always under the microscope for everything they do.
But, you know, I think there's a lot of luck involved in marriage. We just get along so well, you know, and I got three great sons. It's been really fun.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they're also in entertainment as well.
Yes. Jimmy, my son Jimmy, he's the middle one. He's leaving tomorrow to go to Canada to do that movie, Saw.
Mm-hmm.
They're not very good. They're terrible movies. But he's in it. He's got a good part in it.
Did you give them the same advice that your mother gave you? Don't turn any job down?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's all the same thing. I said, you're only as popular as the series that you're on. So don't let it go to your head. And they love it. They've been having fun.
Vincent,
my other son, does that the World Poker Tour show. I don't know whether you know that.
You did that yourself. You hosted that for a few years, right?
I was the first host, that's right. And now he's taken over for me, and he's doing very well. He's the commentator on it.
Are you a poker player yourself?
Yes, oh yes. He's married to Eileen Davidson. She's the star of The Young and the Restless. That's the soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
She's been on that for 10 years.
When they were starting off, did they ever come to you and say, Dad, look, you know, I need some help with a character or role that I just have difficulty getting into?
I'll tell you what they do. They want me to help them learn the lines. I cue them. But they never asked me how to do the part, no. But they did always ask me to help them, to cue them.
Do you see yourself even retiring at any point, or do you still enjoy it so much that, you know, getting up and getting ready and going to an early morning call is still enjoyable?
Yes. I don't want to retire. I'd like to keep working till the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. I really do. And I keep thinking of what my mother said. Don't ever turn a job down. So I don't think I'll ever turn one down.
Do you now, at this point of your life, think, you know, there must be some character or role that you would like to play at some point. Is there anything like that?
Well, yes, not a lot, but I would like to play a gangster, you know, because I'm always playing these goody-goody parts. I think it would be fun to play a sort of a, you know, I'd like to play a gangster.
like a Godfather type character?
Yeah, I'd love to do something like that. I know I don't look the type, but I'd like to try it.
Well, you know, I think that if you said that, I could, for some reason, I don't think Mel Brooks has ever done a gangster movie. I have a feeling that if he did, he would probably cast you as the role as the Godfather.
I'm gonna see him Wednesday, mm-hmm. So I'm gonna tell him what you said. That's funny. What is today? Tuesday.
Today's Tuesday. Yes, it's Tuesday
I'll
for you.
I'll see him tomorrow. I'll have lunch with him tomorrow. I'm gonna tell him what you said. That's funny.
So you're in touch.
Actually,
then.
It's a good idea. He could make. Wouldn't that be? He could do a whole farce comedy on gangsters and all that. That would be very funny.
He could pull it off. I mean, it's when I watch his films, and but he also is quite unique because he has a cast of regular players usually.
Yeah, I'm in that bunch.
What is it that must mean? That must be, of course, one of the reasons why those films are so successful.
Yeah, well, he has like Cloris Leachman, Harvey Korman, Dom DeLuise, and me. And Dom and Harvey are gone now. They died. They died last year.
Mm-hmm.
But they were the ones that he always had. And he has a guy called Rudy DeLuca too. He always plays small parts in the pictures.
Did you ever, at any point, think about even returning to the stage?
No, I would. You know, if I got a job that they called me to go to New York and do a show, I would do it in a minute. Really, I would like to do it on stage again.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done one. Well, the last one I did was Cinderella with Renee Taylor and Joe Bologna. That was 2 years ago. That was on Broadway. And then before that, the year before that, I did Thieves with Marlo Thomas and Richard Mulligan. And so there's the last two plays I did. Mm-hmm. They were both big hits, too.
Dick Van Patten, thank you very much for taking some time to talk to us on the Happy Station. It's been a great pleasure.
I enjoyed
you're such,
it very
you're
much.
Such a fascinating guy. And like I said, the first time that I saw you in anything, you were speaking French because we would get the shows. And I think today, after we finish, I'm going to ask my mom to send some Cousin Tony's Texas chili.
I enjoyed talking to you. I appreciate how nice you are.
Well, I think that's what us Sagittarians have in common.
Right. So but, now don't forget, Red Fox, Donny Osmond, and Kirk Douglas all have our birthday.
That was American actor Dick Van Patten. His new book, by the way, is called 80 Is Not Enough, One American Actor's Journey Through American Entertainment, and it was co-written by Robert Baer. It's published by Phoenix Books, so just do a search in Google for Phoenix Books, and you will be able to find it. It's an absolutely fascinating read. There's some wonderful stories in here about his early days in radio, as well as some very young pictures of Dick taken many, many moons ago. So I want to thank you, Dick, for joining us on this edition of The Happy Station. Our website, by the way, is www.pcjmedia.com. And, you know, every 2 weeks, every week almost, even, we add new things to the website. So do check us out. We have a poll running right now, and we'll be announcing the results of the poll next month. It's a very simple question, so you still have time to go and take part. The question is, who is your favorite Happy Station show host? Again, who is your favorite Happy Station show host? You have five choices. The first one is Eddie Starts. The second is Tom Meyer. The third is Pete Myers. The fourth, Jonathan Goubert. And the fifth is yours truly. And we'll be announcing the results next month. So once again, pcjmedia.com. I'm wondering if we should squeeze in some music right now. I think, yes, we have enough time.
We're going to take a listen to an orchestra from Holland called the Metropole Orchestra. They're one of Europe's leading studio orchestras for television and radio and many different things. In fact, when Diana Krall recorded her Live in Paris recording a few years ago, it was the Metropole Orchestra under the direction at the time of Klaus Ogerman that accompanied her for that live session. Here they are with Penny Serenade on the International Happy Station. The Metropole Orchestra with Penny Serenade here on the International Happy Station. Oh, this cold is really driving me crazy. During the course of the day, my voice was sort of normal. And then as we came to the studio to do the show, it was getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And I have a feeling that within the next 2 hours or so, I'll be talking like this. So we have to wrap it up very soon. All right. On the website, as you probably gathered, there's a link now to listen to PCJ Radio Online. I want to take just a few moments to tell you what that's going to be about. It is going to be a 6-hour rotation at the beginning, and the 6 hours will be updated new every Sunday. And the programs will include not just a Happy Station show, but we'll also have a show called The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder, who's been a guest on this show a few times. Nash Holas, with Paulette McCory, which is a very odd and fun Ukrainian music and cultural show. Network Europe Week from Radio Netherlands. Arts on the Air from Radio Deutsche Welle. And then very soon, we're going to have some other programs. One show is going to be called As You Like It with David Monten, an off-the-beat classical music show. Finally, Fridays, which will come to us from South Africa and will be presented by Neil Hendrickse, as well as some other interesting little short features, including Bob Zanotti with some features about Switzerland. So do check us out. Just go to www.pcjmedia.com, and you'll notice it in the front page. But if you want to do a search for PCJ Radio, because our streaming at the moment is done via Live365, go to their website and do a search for PCJ Radio, and you will find it. Okay, let's see. Next month, coming up on the show, we're going to have another one of our series of Happy Station's tribute to radio, another interesting one, and stay tuned to find out when that program will be done for you. Next week, however, we're going to be going back to our regular, you know, kind of Happy Station show, because we'll be doing our different shows for different regions. So that's one special show for South America, 2 hours UTC on 9,955 kilohertz. One for North America at 16 hours UTC on 9,955 kilohertz in the 31 meter band, both on Thursdays. Different transmission for New Zealand at 9 hours UTC. A different one for South Hertz Radio at southhertzradio.com. Check out their website to find out when it airs. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, UK time. And then a version at 1305 UTC via Radio Sonora in Indonesia. And then early Monday mornings at 1 o'clock in the morning on KBCT in Waco, Texas. So next week's editions of Happy Station are all going to be different, and you can hear all the different editions by going to our website, which I mentioned earlier. All right, I do have to leave you right now because my voice and my throat is getting in a little more pain, so I will leave you now. So on behalf of our production assistant, Johann Backer, our technician, Kevin Lee, this is Keith Perron, all the way in Taipei, Taiwan, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.
Hi, this is Ian McFarland, If you're an SWL and feel nostalgic for the good old days of shortwave, you'll be interested in three sets of CDs that Colin Newell and I have produced. The first gives you 100 idents and interval signals from stations around the world. Then there's the foreign language recognition course that will help you identify the myriad languages that you can hear on shortwave. And the newest CD set, a look at the past 20 years in shortwave broadcasting with some of my broadcasting colleagues, and a look into the future. The proceeds from the sale of these CDs are in aid of a charity, a food bank for the less fortunate in my city of Duncan, British Columbia in Canada. Learn more about these CDs on the dxr.ca internet website. That's dxr.ca. Good listening, everyone.